Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Forecast is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This episode of Forecast is brought to you by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. All stream directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to Netflix.com/TWiT.
What sort of future do you think we're heading for? How will we live as we slip into the 21st century?
Welcome to Forecast, episode 107.1 FM, WPGU, rock and roll all day long, going into your 4 o'clock hour with a weather report. We're going to get to some sticks in a minute, Scott.
Well, Tom is looking pretty crazy up here on the I-95 interchange. I'm just kidding. We're not playing that thing whole show. No way, but it's 107 and I'm thrilled to be here. Thanks for having me again.
Well, thanks for co-hosting the show with me.
Well, it's what I do. It's great to be back. I know we're coming off our first week last week of a small tweak to the format.
Right, right.
And very happy with how things turned out. So today we continue the tradition.
Right. So today it will go horribly wrong. No, actually, it should not go horribly wrong because we have fantastic guests with us. Joining us, Justin Robert Young, co-host of NSFW, writer for Game On, WeirdThings.com, and iTricks.com, and beard wearer.
Yes, a proud beard wearer I am. How are you doing, Scott and Tom?
Good, beard wearing Justin.
is this the new format?
Yeah, the new format is called Awkward. Do you like it?
Yeah, you like it so far?
Yeah, it's going great. Andrew Main also joining us, magician, illusion designer, and filmmaker, author, publisher of WeirdThings.com. Andrew, welcome to the show. Non-beard wearer.
Yeah, I know, non-beard. And I got a haircut, too, so I am kind
You're looking very clean and respectable.
As much as I can.
Wow. That's great.
I can do that. Very jaundiced too by this light.
Are you? Mm. Are you feeling it? A little whoa. Yeah. You okay there?
Yeah, I'm all right. I'm good.
When you see the flash, duck and cover.
Yes. No, I see I have a fluorescent like right by my head because I was trying to like in the future, Ridley Scott will light everything.
Yes. And oh, I saw an Abrams lens flare.
Yes.
Oh wow.
Now Scott, answer me this as an objective observer. If you took some of Justin's beard and put it on Andrew, there'd still be enough for both of them, right? So,
oh, my gosh, yes. In fact,
pretty average.
I know some hairless gorillas that would line up for this particular option. You know, Justin can grow hair like nobody's business. And I'm happy to report that he actually is a little piece of our morning show every Thursday. He comes on and talks about weird things. Oftentimes, the topic is Sasquatch/Bigfoot, and yes. I'm happy to see that he is living truly what he's covering. He is really getting into the business of, tracking Bigfoot, and he's got the look. I like it.
Well, you know, Scott, when you get really into the nitty-gritty of these things, really, there's a fuzzy line between hunter and the hunted.
Furry.
You know, right. you really become you become what you seek.
Yeah.
Yeah, no pun intended with the
although, fuzzy. Scott, I'm not sure if it was cool to call Veronica Belmont and Brian Brushwood, hosts of Game On, hairless gorillas. And
I know, that's not cool.
I'd watch that.
I take it back, yeah. And you heard it here first, that I apologize publicly for what I have done.
I'll let the listeners guess which one was which.
All right, let's start with our first segment, predictions from listeners. Let me tell you, folks, this is where you star. So if you're sitting there thinking, I can do this, I can come up with some stupid prediction. In fact, I can come up with a smart prediction about the future. You need to email us, forecastpodcast@gmail.com, and you could be on the show, just like Ben Ware of Fordingbridge, Hampshire, England, who wrote in and said, I think that in the next 10 to 15 years, we will start to see the first cults that worship the internet as a god. Several reasons include complete pervasiveness of the service in all walks of life and the limitless information it provides, coupled with the increasing intelligence of the system, which will appear, especially to younger generations who will know nothing different, godlike. He puts those in quotes. However, as with real-world religion, there will be absolutely no consensus, which will lead to a cyber-religious fanatical DDoS terrorism. Thanks. Love the show.
Wow. First of all, our best of Fordingbridge, Hampshire, England. That's a great name for any town.
Hampshire.
Yeah, This is interesting because, you know, you always, we brought this up on the show before. How would it be to just take your iPhone or your Android phone or some other weird, I don't know, something electronic, a camera, whatever, take it back in time, just in, I don't know, a couple hundred years, and start showing that off. And one of two things will happen. If there's enough of them and they sort of have their wherewithal, they'll burn you because they'll think you're a witch. But hopefully what happens, maybe if you have a buddy system and you take somebody with you, they're going to see you wielding such amazing power that truly it can only come from a deity. And the idea, you know, that seems like a really plausible idea. If we get past the time travel part, the part about showing people amazing technology and having them take you as, you know, for God is seems like a pretty natural fit. When it comes to the future, I struggle a little bit because there it's not like they're not going to be along for the ride so much. I mean, I guess what he's saying is it's so far flung that new generations would have to be so undereducated about the origins and status of this quote unquote internet that is so pervasive that they'll have no idea how to behave or what to think or know how, you know, where it comes from or how it works, and therefore treat it as some sort of deity. That feels like a stretch to me, Tom, just a tiny bit. Like, I feel like we should give more credit to people than that.
I think you can go two ways with this. One is to go with the very conservative way, which is, of course, he's going to be right, because we have crazy little quasi-religious organizations sprouting up again about everything. There is a church of television out there. There really is. So I would be surprised if there isn't already a church of the internet, right?
It's Richard Stallman's the Pope.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, we have this.
There is that.
I mean, we have
right,
this.
The open source
I mean,
religion,
this,
too.
We have all the trappings of religious zealotry about this stuff already. And, you know, if you ever go back and you – a great book is The Cult at the End of the World about the Aum Shri Ryu cult in Japan in the late 1990s. They were the closest non-governmental organization to ever come to creating chemical weapons and using them on the public in their attempt to do the sarin gas attacks in the subways, predating, you know, Al-Qaeda's rise and whatnot. And it was a bunch of engineers and geeks who read Isaac Asimov's Foundation and were just thrilled about the idea of the future and wanted to bring it about in their own weird way. So,
did those people, I know nothing about that other than I remember when it happened and it was a kind of a big deal and I know cursory things, but did they see what they were doing as some kind of destiny that was divinely handed to them? Like, was it that much of a religion? Because what I'm looking at here is like really religious, like doing stuff that is miraculous and weak and humans can't comprehend. Therefore, it must be God kind of.
Well, I mean, from my understanding of what the question was from the person, were these people deifying the internet because they didn't know its origins, or are they deifying it because they looked at how it affected their life? You know, in the case of the Aum Shri Ryu cult, the reason they got so far in developing the sarin gas attacks, which didn't work, just shows you how complex those things are, is because it was engineers and scientists, very, very technically literate people who had found this new futuristic technical age religion that appealed to them, you know, based in part on, you know, Isaac Asimov's Foundation, who actually, I think, it's scary. You start looking at the influences that, but it's like Catcher in the Rye now for cultists and tyrannical leaders, you know, because it was one of those things. That's where Al-Qaeda's name came from, the base from the foundation, which is actually influenced by that book, too.
I want to point out here just before, and I want to get to Justin Robert Young's perspective on this. There's a few people in the chat room taking umbrage, saying, this is kind of an anti-religious question. Let's leave out major religions from this. And this has nothing to do with established religions. We're talking about any kind of religion. Uh-huh. So if you're thinking like, wait a minute, you know, my religion isn't like that. We're talking about the wide angle on any kind of religion out there. Justin, go ahead.
Yeah. When Aum Shri Ryu practitioners, we apologize.
Yes.
No, I would say if you look at, you know, years from now, if we look at a period of history in which we started to gather a collective consciousness, I could see an element first born by nostalgia and then taking it further from there, that we look at this far in the future as a supernatural kind of element, that even as we see how technically all of this is currently coming together in a society that is post the internet that we think of now as something that we go to when it is enveloped all of us, the beginnings of that might seem, you know, a bit mystical. And I think that people might read into that and have different, far different feelings about it because they didn't know how it sprung up than we do right now.
Here's an angle that I think is possible. We get to that far-flung future, and it is so pervasive that it's an everyday part of our lives. And to me, that just means acceptance, and we don't get weirded out by it. It's just part of life. What ends up springing up are, because you said the word nostalgia, and it made me think of, you know, technology traditionalists, let's call them. And
yeah.
they spring up and do weird things like, you know, fill a room with shrines to things like Commodore 64s. And I'm not even being funny here. The machines of old, the machines that are the progenitors, the founders, if you will. I could see that getting a lot of momentum. And when those things actually work, people will just like create, like I said, shrines and sort of, you know, places that you'd want to make a pilgrimage to see, like a tape freaking with data on it. And stuff like that. Like, it would be crazy. I could totally see that. That springing up around it while everyone else is, you know, using whatever the current day thing is. This is kind of a rebellion against that and kind of a look, you know, back to a more pure mechanical computer age.
I think about it as an analog to books. I mean, think of the role books play in religion. In fact, in some sects and some disciplines, the book itself is considered holy.
Name what?
Buddhism. I'm not just talking about Christianity. So the internet as an information source, like a book, could become that same sort of thing. You know, we could have the people of the internet, just like we have the people of the book.
So the fetishization of an abstract thing. I mean, that's kind of an interesting idea where Scott says, what about a tape? But here we talk about the internet as a, you know, it's not a physical thing that has a lineage that you would look at. That's my alarm telling me to be on the show.
Okay. Can you tell the alarm you're on the show?
Yeah, it's aware of that now.
Good. All right.
Well, I mean, if we are going to take on acts on articles of faith, how much of our own day, or I know for me, do I just completely fling myself into the internet with the faith that they have my answer? You know, like, I think that there's something that point. Something to be said for a utility becoming so much a part of a society's existence that we start to romanticize it a bit. And I think that we're not far from there from having a religious element.
You know, if I were a symphony conductor, I would have stopped this show.
Yes, you would have. But if there was so imagine, okay, here's where I think this ends up. I like all these ideas, but in my head, and maybe I've got too much science fiction on the brain right now, but imagine a time we have destroyed ourselves. I don't know if that was with bombs or if that was with a super virus we engineered, and now everyone is dead except a few who have survived somehow. They've become immune. They've gotten over whatever horrible thing we've done to decimate humanity. They find the only functioning server room, like data farm somewhere, and it's still on because I don't know why, but we've got great batteries.
They had a hell of a sysadmin,
right? Exactly. It's some Google data center in like way out in Kansas somewhere, and it hardly got touched.
A carbonite for Leibowitz,
exactly. And it's still running, and it's still nothing's coming out of it. Nobody can connect to it, but we look at it as some sort of monolithic sign that, you know, this survived, therefore it is our new God, and we must, you know, sort of bow to it.
It tells us to sacrifice until Captain Kirk saves us.
Right. Right.
The return of the Archons is prophesied. In fact, that leads us. Thank you, Ben Ware, for that. That's a fantastic thought-provoking email. You, too, could send us a thought-provoking email. First, you need to have a thought that will provoke us, then write it down and send it to forecastpodcast@gmail.com. Or you can post it up at our blog, forecastpodcast.com. I bring up Return of the Archons because I just watched it last night on Netflix, the sponsor of today's episode of Forecast. Netflix allows you to stream thousands of TV episodes and movies directly to you instantly, saving you not only time, but also money and hassle. Right? You want to hassle somebody? Use Netflix, save up a lot of hassle, use it against them later. Actually, that's not the way it works. It's a very easy way to watch unlimited movies and TV shows for one low rate, but you don't have to pay anything to watch it on your Logitech Review or your Sony TV or your Xbox, your Wii, your PS3, your Roku, your iPad, your Android phone. I mean, it operates on almost anything. Go to netflix.com/twit, try it out free for 30 days. I've been doing it because I've been sick. You know, when you're sick, you just kind of want to lay there. You don't really want to think. You don't want to do anything. You just want to lay there. But I wasn't so sick that I wanted to fall asleep all the time. So I started watching the entire run of Star Trek on Netflix. The best part about it was that I could just jump around. I didn't have to watch it in order. I could watch one and go, well, that reminds me of the episode on Star Trek The Next Generation where Scotty shows up, right? And I watch Relics on Next Generation. Yeah. And then I'm like, oh, but that reminds me of that episode of Enterprise, the only one that was good, where so-and-so showed up. And then you go watch, and you could just skip around. And I've just been watching the original Star Trek. Now I've gotten into the habit where I'm watching the original Star Trek in order. But it's pretty fantastic. You have, just for the Star Trek universe, all of the episodes, as well as the J.J. Abrams movie available right now on Netflix. So go try it out for free for 30 days or tell a friend. Netflix.com/twit. We thank them for their support.
All right, Mr. Nerd Cred. Forecast. Hold on. What else were you watching? Because your lovely wife sold you out on Twitter.
Well, no. We did watch. We finally finished watching Friday Night Lights. The Star Trek of football
games. What
else?
Admit it. It involves a dog.
Oh, no. That wasn't on Netflix.
Well, then that's a good reason.
Actually, that's a funny story. That has nothing to do with Forecast or Netflix. But I was using my Google TV, right? And so I finished with Netflix, and I flipped it over to live TV for a second just to see what was on. And I saw a lot of talking dogs. My wife loves dogs. Talking dogs even better. So I ran into the other room. I was like, turn it to 504. And we turn it, and all of a sudden we see the guy from Pushing Daisies, like, walking along talking to himself. Turns out it was the movie Marmaduke.
Lee Pace?
Yeah. So we kind of watched it for about 10 minutes, like waiting to see some more talking dogs. We did. They really weren't that funny. We turned it off.
Waiting for the plot to develop.
Now that we've updated. This week in Marmaduke.
This week in accidental Marmaduke watching. That's what
happened. It's not one of John Sayles' better movies, surprisingly.
Is that a John Sayles, really? No. I thought it was Ingmar Bergman myself. Yes. I had no idea. All right, Andrew, it is time to do some predicting. It is you are a second segment. Lay it on us. What do you got for us?
Okay, I have a three-parter.
Oh wow, okay. Nice.
And it's the first part's got two parts to it.
So it's actually a five-parter.
I'm making that up. My prediction is this, okay? We've watched the rise of IBM's Watson computational system. And Watson is a great special purpose system. It says, okay, let's have a computer that can figure out how to beat Jeopardy champions, okay? It used to be we tried to figure out how to beat people at chess. We've done that. That's old hat. Although some people still argue that chess computers really just figure out how to beat the player. But anyhow, chess we've lost. And so then IBM came out with Watson, says we're going to win at Jeopardy. The new direction they're moving with Watson is to do medical information. They want to try and get Watson to make better diagnoses than doctors can do. And that's interesting. I think within the next 3 years, we're either going to see Watson or a system like it that's a computational engine that's looking at a broad amount of knowledge and trying to do synthesis to answer questions. I think in the next 3 years, we're going to see one of these systems effectively win the Turing test, where one person on one end is trying to decide if they're talking to a computer or a person and is unable to tell within a statistically significant, you know, number of times. That does not mean that that computer is, of course, actually artificially intelligent, but it just answers that aspect of the Turing test. So 3 years, something like Watson is able to defeat the Turing test.
That sounds like stage one of some worse prediction to me. That sounds like the beginning of the end of mankind. Tell me I'm not wrong. Tell me it doesn't stop there. There's
why
more.
Why would it be bad? Number one, why does every science fiction thing always have to end with us murdering the planet and ourselves and each other?
No, Justin, it ends with the robots killing us.
Okay, right. Fine. Yes, whatever. There's always like the nuclear weapons get loosed and we're all dead. Except for the fact that every bit of technology ever has only made us better and happier and healthier and lived longer. It's like the exact opposite. Why is it always death and destruction?
He's in Florida, Tom, first of all. Second of all, I would say this about you bring up a good point, Justin, and I think that there's actually a pretty logical answer for it. It's that I think there's a natural human tendency to feel like we've got it too good. It's gone too smoothly. That gets better and better. Something's got to give at some point. It's like the Euro. That seemed like an awesome idea. Man, the French and the Germans, they were behind that thing. And now they're like, oh, crap, we let in Greece or Athens. What were we doing there? What was it? What were we thinking? And I feel like there's a creeping sensation that we are slowly creating devices that will pass the Turing test and kill us eventually. Like, there's just a matter of time. Now, I'm not saying that's true, and I actually agree with you, but how would you, since you can't ever know, you never can know if we're eventually going to get to a point where these machines become self-aware, and because they have no emotion, both neither good nor bad, they will only want to survive, and they may destroy us as a result. That pending fear, I think, will always be with us. The more we progress, the more the sense we're going to have that, oh, crap, we're taking it too far. We've gotten too good at this. At some point, someone's just going to go, bop, that's it. You've either gone too far, or this thing's too smart, or that thing's too powerful, and it's going to wipe us out.
But you know, there was a point where there was a dude who took a horse and buggy to go send a letter that a dude on a horse had to ride out, and then went back to his un-air-conditioned house, and he dabbed his forehead and said, "Man, we got it too good. This is all going to collapse tomorrow."
Well, actually, the answer to your question, Justin, is that we evolved to evade predators. And so when we imagine creating super intelligent machines, you know, I think part of us sees a predator that we need justifiably to be afraid of.
We see a predator, though, in our context of understanding it. You know, when we either imagine them 100 years ago, we imagine them as sort of 19th century colonialists with the same things. Now we imagine them as just hyper-intelligent apes with the same motivations as that. When, you know, we exist with 99.9% of all the animal species on our planet pretty easily. We've got bacteria that live in our stomach, and we're happy to have it there. And I think that if there's going to be any way we're going to coexist with these, you know, hyper-intelligent machines, should they come along, that's going to be it. It's going to be that kind of symbiosis, because what their requirements and ours are going to probably be different. And also, you're going to have this thing, too, is that you're not going to have Skynet. You know, you're going to have a Cambrian explosion of these intelligences because of the fact that, you know, having one computer communicate with another computer from a large distance, you've got, you know, the speed of light to deal with. And there's going to be an information lag, and you're going to get basically the evolution of multiple intelligences, because while one is sending an information to there, they're going to develop independently, and you're going to get kind of, you know, a lot of them, and you're going to get this sort of myriad thing. And I kind of think that, you know, there's a Ricardo's rule in economics, I think, kind of explains sort of, you know, my reasoning for why I don't really worry about that as much as I used to when I cried myself at night, you know, fearing the robot revolution,
mm-hmm.
which is basically just the idea that you're, even if you have somebody who isn't as qualified or isn't as good at doing something as you, it's always advantageous to trade with them. So if you have a bunch of super brilliant machines, there's going to be a value in them trading and participating in an economy with us, because we can do some of the things. They're better focused on their most important tasks. And maybe that's, you know, high functioning things about how to, you know, tap into dark matter or whatever while we're cleaning their toilets. I don't know. But I think I'm not as worried.
It's safer to overestimate the threat, whether you're on the savannah or in a technological society, than to underestimate the threat, Justin. It would be irresponsible for us not to fear a robot revolution, lest one overtake us.
Careful and reasonable fear is one thing, but it's obsessive. It's our own self-loathing complex manifested in every... It's just a pervasive element of science.
No, we don't loathe ourselves, just the robots.
No, we hate... Well, because the robots are born of us. There are little tiny metal babies.
Oh, so we hate children.
But I mean, in seriousness, though, but we've seen that fear manifested in people like Ted Kaczynski and the Unabomber.
Sure.
Somebody who took this, you know, you have
goes
people who are, yeah, and you have people, you know, who are tearing apart, you know, biological facilities that are trying to figure out how to feed people in Africa and setting them on fire and destroying these seed crops because they have this, you know, they think that they've figured out the equation and realize, oh, it's worse if this thing happens. And that's what concerns me, is the idea of, you know, how do we balance our fear with how we decide to act? And, you know, we've seen people who've decided that they're justified to act on that.
Yeah, go ahead, Scott.
I was just going to say, I've got a friend who hates flying worse than me. I already hate it, but he hates it worse than I do. He's deathly afraid of flying, doesn't like it at all, does whatever he can to avoid flying. 2 weeks ago, this article comes out, brand new study showing that we are at an all-time safety record in the airline industry worldwide. There are less fatalities in the airline business as a result of a flight or something resulting in someone's death on a flight than in any other time in the history of the medium. It's never, in other words, the message is never been a safer time to fly, an actual scientific study. But I said this to my friend, I said, did you see this? I sent him the link. Check this out. Maybe this will lay some of your fears. He says, no, it makes it worse. And I said, why? He says, because now we're due. He says, we're due for some major catastrophe. It's been too long since we've had a bad one. And I said, well, this is like 30 years of data or more. This shows that, you know, with this period is just, you know, the best time to fly.
I love that.
And he's sure that that means that we are due some major problem, and that it was just a numbers game in a matter of time. So I feel like he is totally irrational with what he's thinking. But I also think he drives people like Justin to fight against that, because not only is it ridiculous thinking, but Justin does not want to accept the fact that the idea of being due is even a decent way to think about stuff. Does that make sense, Justin?
But just kind of add to Justin's point. The thing about the flight thing, though, is the thing that sort of gets overlooked was there was a big fundamental shift in the way we handled information. And that used to be that we had a system that did not encourage pilots to report mechanical errors or anytime they noticed something inconsistent with their aircraft, because they had to put their name on it and they stood the fear of them getting kicked off a rotation or whatever. When they changed that, the amount of data that we had fundamentally changed the way we looked at things. And so when you talk about things being due, you got to understand why did this period come from? And if you don't know, this thing changed what we understood. It's hard to look at all the data. Justin.
Yes. Also, things. Furthermore, stuff that supports those things and amplifies my yes.
I'm going to take a subtle disagreement with one of the points Justin made, but not fundamentally override what he just said.
You know, the thing about going over what you said before is that you really just keep repeating the same thing over and over again.
You really just keep repeating the same thing over and over again. It's true. Yeah. All right. Enough of this craziness. Scott, I think what you were getting to is a good point, which is the weird do is the emotional reaction, right? It isn't based in statistics. It isn't based in rationality. It's a gut feeling, and what Andrew was pointing out is a very rational way of looking at it and saying, well, forget whether we're due or not. You know, there's a real reason why some statistics may have been different at one point and another, and that's a rational way to say, okay, well, maybe these are misleading. Justin's pushing for is let's actually acknowledge that we have this, you know, emotional reaction to robots or whatever. But let's try to use our rationality to overrule that.
We do. We use our emotional fear to worry about whether or not a robot AI is going to kill us. And we put effort into it. My problem is when we look at these things as inevitable, when we look at, the progression of technology that eventually, like, it's some wild horse that we're going to lose control of and eventually will trample us. It's not. It's our creation. And as long as we continue to focus on making it a benefit us and to continue to create a better society as we have continually for the last 200 years, then we will be okay. And we shouldn't obsess over this doomsday boner we all have.
I fundamentally agree, but I should mention, this is important to mention, the guy I was talking to, my friend, when we were having this conversation and I sent him this link, he was driving in his car using his handset. So all I'm saying is, he's a big dope anyway. Yeah.
Statistically speaking,
he's going to die in his car, not a plane. But anyway,
we should use our irrational fears to remain ever vigilant against any possibility of a robot uprising. Andrew Main, last word on this to you.
I know the statistics and all that stuff, but I still get scared when I get on an airplane.
Yeah, exactly. That's the point, right?
I'm afraid I wouldn't talk about this stuff for the longest time when I was flying a lot, because there was a reporter, she used to cover airline crashes, and then she died in one, which statistically, of course, and I know this stuff and I explain this to people in my own condescending way, yet I'm afraid.
Yeah, well, so that's the thing. I think that's okay. It's like, it's one thing to know something rationally. It's another thing, like, you can't decide to, if you could decide to be emotional or not, it wouldn't be emotions, and emotions wouldn't be a problem. Like, you know, it's all trying to repress those emotions into a deep, dark corner where they don't come out until you're like 60 or so and you have a crisis. Right?
You certainly didn't give Andrew the last word.
Andrew, last word to you again. Ah, he doesn't want it. Okay. Now, we keep losing Andrew, actually.
I was going to say, that was a scary stare. I was having an emotional reaction to his frozen face.
I was too.
I'm not going to lie.
All right, last word to you, Justin.
Yeah, no, I think I could end on doomsday boner. I think I went out with a flourish there.
Good. Now it is time to move to you, Justin Robert Young.
Yes.
Not the way one moves from one house to another, but in the way it is your turn to give us your predictions.
Yes, in the way that we moves like Jagger. I would say, while Andrew's gone, I'll use one of the things that we've talked about in the past, and it's probably 90% more his idea than mine. I think that if you were to go 10 years in the future, you would see people walking around every major metropolitan city in America, and you would legitimately think that aliens were walking in society. Oh, I think that we are going to evolve, and I mean by our own, by the physical augmentations of our body becoming cheaper and easier to do, that we are going to see effectively new races of people, or at least to our own eye, be born and have, you know, take root. That basically we will be able to switch, you know, we'll be able to change and add to ourselves in the same way that we get a tattoo now or a piercing, something that easy, you know, plastic surgery. There will be able to be physical augmentations to us.
So you're not we're not talking just a fashion change. You're talking about, like, literally our visage will change because we're having changes made to our physical, biological being.
Yes. And I think that there will be a million different ways that we go with it. Some people do increase, you know, some people for vanity, some people for what they think will be health or something like that, you know. But we will make permanent changes to our own biology, and it will splinter and fragment our society, if even just on that small level.
I don't want to get hung up on the time frame, but 10 years seems, I used to think 10 years was a long, long time. But if I go back 10 years, 2002, that doesn't seem like that long ago. And I don't feel like what I was thinking then has really, I mean, lots of things have changed. Certainly for me, fundamentally, things have changed. But lots of things have changed, but they haven't really been that stark. What is it about another relatively short 10-year period of time
price
you think makes the difference? Price. Oh,
price,
okay.
My friend. Take it from somebody who listens to FM radio in South Florida. Plastic surgery is cheaper than ever, my friend. You can go in the span of a lunch break, get pretty much any outpatient surgery for a very affordable price. And I think that that is something that will only continue. And with the price coming down for things that we know now as, you know, what we would consider to be human maintenance thing, a girl get a boob job or to have liposuction or something like that, an eye lift. As the prices for those things come down, I think that more exotic things will be around. And I think that it's going to get to the point where if you walk around, and I'm not saying Iowa, you know, I'm not saying that in Ames there's going to be a dude with a reptile face, but at a hipster bar in Brooklyn,
It could be a reptile face bar.
Those dudes.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting about this is I think you're right. I think a section of the population will take huge advantage of that. I mean, you look at people with tattoos and earrings and piercings, and it just seems like a logical progression if the price comes down and it's made available for people to do that stuff. I don't think it'll ever be the majority of people, right? But I think it'll be noticeable. On the other hand, I think it also means as the price comes down, and somebody in the chat room beat me to it, they said it there first, we get a certain segment, again, not a majority, who start to look like each other as they try to move towards. I don't know if you've ever seen that picture of, like, the most beautiful woman. They like, aggregated all the highly rated attractive features, and it's Bea Arthur. No, it's not. If you look it up, you can find it's, like, this woman with black hair and, you know, like, I think she's even got dark eyes or something, but it's just kind of the, you know, statistically most attractive woman. And I think women start to try to look like that. Men start to try to look like the statistically average most attractive man. And we have, like, an army of clones walking around as well.
I've thought about this, having spent time in Los Angeles a lot. And I think you might get a period. You certainly see a thing in LA where you can say, oh, you know, you've seen that nose before. That's a number 32. That's a 32. And you know the name of the surgeon that does it. And that's a real thing. You know the surgeon who does it. part of that is based upon they have a very limited palette to work from. And I absolutely agree with the idea. We move towards these ideals, but then you start to get, as we have better control over these things, you know, as we evolve, you know, we've got, now we're growing, you know, skin in, you know, in microreactor incubators and stuff. We're able to do more of this stuff, grow tissues outside the body. You're going to get a facelift, will eventually be really a facelift. It will be new skin put onto your face. That's if it isn't some sort of pill you take that would do that. I think that we're going to see probably, I think you're right, towards, and people will try to go towards the ideal, but then you're going to want to get the variations from that. You see that in Hollywood actresses. There are some very, you know, famous actresses, and you look at their noses start to look alike as they become more successful. And you know, Brittany Murphy was a very, very, very pretty, beautiful girl before she passed away. But you look at what she did, the surgery she had done before she died, and she had a very distinct look. And then she gravitated more and more towards that leading lady sort of look. And that is a real thing. But I would like to think, as we get more control, we'll have more ability to make different choices than just go to that guy who does that nose.
Well, but I think, Andrew, you're not wrong that there will be people who do that. But then I just think there's like there'll be a section of people who want to have reptile faces and three tails and just, you know, like try out different stuff. There also will be a section of people who look like this woman who's the like virtual face. This is from a psychology study.
She really looks like, that's like a young Demi Moore.
Yeah. Yeah. And you just see 30 of these, you know, and everything you said will also be true. There'll be people trying to, you know, do variations and stand out from the crowd and everything.
And the future is not static. The future is an ongoing thing. And I think that you'll certainly get to a point, you know, you're going to get a thing where, you know, people will go there. But when your girl shows up and she's 30 other people have the same face at a party, guess what she's doing Monday morning? You know, her decision is, I want to go a little bit different. Maybe I want to have, you know, more Asian looking eyes or appearances or whatever, or, you know, whatever cheekbones. So I think I absolutely agree. You're right. But I think that it's a thing that changes. And as far as the reptile people and all that stuff, I think when we get to the point where it's not permanent, where you can do these temporary grafts and stuff like that, Dragon Con is going to be crazy. Furries and stuff are going to be all over this. And I am frightened by this future. And if there's something we need to be fearful of,
that are you kidding me? That's going to be awesome. The parade will be the best ever.
I just have this fear of, you know, meeting some nice girl or whatever and, you know, finding out the tail is real.
Why is that a fear?
Exactly. Three tails? I wish I had more hands.
Because of the uncomfortable feelings that it gives me.
that's kind of disgusting. Here's what I think needs to happen. For this to happen, you need to have the augmentations be fluid. In other words, it doesn't sound right either, but I want the augmentations
not to be fluids.
To change on one's whim. I want to be able to walk into the bathroom and go, all right, well, today my nose needs to be wider. So it's wider. Today I need my ears to be smaller and back. Okay, great. They are something. It needs to change from like what we do now with plastic surgery, which is really start the process of sending them into looking like a ridiculous bulbous clown by the time they're 50. And they look ridiculous with that kind of work by then. But we got to get out of that and move to something that's like, you can take it away. I want to look like a natural aging person today. Fine. Make it go away. It can't be surgery every time, and it can't be painful, and it can't be permanent.
I absolutely agree. And I think that is the end point's going to be basically we're going to have our own DNA modified or have microbots, whatever, we can do that. But before we get to there in the near term, you look at they have injectable fillers now. You know, you can go in there in an afternoon procedure. And if you're, you know, as you get older, one of the things happens, your eyes start to recede further back into your skull or look like that. They have these injectable fillers that go away after 3 months. It's not the same as having somebody pull on your skin or whatever, and it's gone. You know, and there's a lot of these little procedures, which are these sort of temporary things that, you know, come about because we realize, okay, this degrades, whatever, we can do this. And so I think we're going to see, you know, you can do certain things with that. And I think we're going to start to see more things about, you know, implantable fat type cells and stuff like that. They give you, you know, that way it's not like when people started getting makeup tattooed on their face permanently. So I think intermediate steps are going to be things like that. And then eventually, yeah, you know, we'll all be, I think when we encounter alien life that wherever exists and it's more advanced, they're all going to be, you know, they're all going to be morphs. They're all going to be able to, you know, change the way they look.
Mm. Justin, what would you change? What's the first thing? What are you swapping out?
I would get bigger hands just to impress the ladies.
Mm. Does that impress the ladies?
Be like, look, you know what they say about big hands.
He couldn't afford the other surgery.
Enhance.
Well, see, that's the phrase would go away in the future because you know what they say about big hands. Yeah, he had handwork done is what they'll know.
And then he couldn't afford to have anything else changed.
Yeah.
Yep. That's
but I mean,
it.
You don't you don't want to have big apish hands. Like, what do you think
That's what I want. I want it to be for my sex life, like what those border towns in North Korea are. You know, where they just have like those perfect towns that are actually just like sets, like to try and trick the South Koreans into coming to North Korea. That's right. What I wanted to. All right. I don't know. I mean, I would say if I were to do some kind of drastic change, I think I would probably do something crazy. Like if I could have like some crazy sort of hair addition, I think I would probably go for something like on my head.
Yeah. Imagine Justin with crazy hair.
Yeah.
But like if I could get some crazy hair, that'd be cool.
Yeah. How about Andrew, would you? This is obviously a very personal question. What would we change about ourselves? But is there any one thing that jumps out?
The correct answer is you wouldn't change anything because you're totally comfortable.
He's a handsome young man.
But forget that. What would you change?
I mean, somebody's involved in the entertainment industry and already having, you know, extreme narcissistic tendencies. Although narcissist has been poorly judged by history, he didn't know it was his own reflection he was looking at. So he had a very objective opinion. I mean, like, I'm still fearful about growing old. You know, that's something that concerns me. If I could sort of just sort of stop at some point, you know, that would be kind of cool. As far as anything else like that, you know, I don't know. I mean, I was athletic when I was younger and, you know, did different sports and stuff. And so my limitations are, you know, stem from my own laziness. So anything else beyond that, you know, I guess if I, you know, want to have a better physique, I should probably work out.
Yeah, Scott, what about you? We're just going to be a bunch of lazy, you know, people with fake artifice. You know, we're still going to be that same thing, but now we look great on the beach.
We'll all be pretty. I think that's a great thing. I think that's a great thing because biologically speaking, as we are predisposed to make certain judgments, I mean, you read evolutionary psychology and you can say a lot of it's bunk, but there's a lot of reality to that and rosy cheeks and things like that. I love the idea that everybody having the opportunity to have an equal footing. You know, everybody to have an equal footing and to not, you know, if your body, you know, makes you process calories less efficiently than somebody else, that gets equalized. And that, you know, if you're worried about being too short to play a game, that we reach this ability where we have within a range that we don't have to worry or have self-esteem issues about these things.
Scott, what would you do? Would you add anything?
Well, that's funny you say that because I can't honestly, I'm sure other people could pick things that they think I should change, but I think
you're
about
perfect,
myself
Scott.
And I really can't think of anything I would that I'm like, oh my gosh, I've got to get rid of that and change that
your
or whatever.
Nothing
jumps to mind, but I do know that if I could say, let me have this technology, but trade it for a different one, that different one would be a synthetic, a robot that would work with me every day to make me work out. Now, what I mean by that is he's not going to physically make me, but he would sit here and go, Scott, it's time to work out. Scott, it's time to work out. Scott, it's time to work out. And he won't shut up. There's no snooze button until I go, all right, fine. I get up. I go do it. He's a personal trainer, too, so he's really, you know, making me work at it. And then he shuts up until the next time to do it. I need something like that because those are the things I want to change about me is how healthy I am, how in shape I am. And that's all willpower problems. So no plastic surgery is going to solve that for me. So I really can't think of anything. Tom, what would you change?
That's a great point.
Chitinous exoskeleton.
Oh. Okay.
I would like to have a chitinous exoskeleton.
He's such a nerd.
Can I say what Scott said, though, is a great point about the idea that he doesn't just want the trophy. He wants to earn it. And I think that's going to be a value we'll start to appreciate more and more as these things become cheap because it'll be like, hey, check out the pecs. I'm like, oh, did you implants or did you work out? No, I worked out. And be like, oh, I got Scott's T-800 robot to chase me around and try to kill me unless I did it. So
maybe it should be a gamification.
That may help, actually. I mean, honestly, the robot would be kind of a piece of that for me. But
right.
I realize the thing I want changed. I want a whole new set of teeth with no nerves this time. And let me start over.
Just I don't know if you really want that,
teeth,
though.
No nerves. I could get it done now. I'd go get implants if I wanted. I hate my teeth. My teeth are hideous. Oh, my eye. You know what? I take it all back. My left eye. Because this is the truth about my left eye. If you took a handful of dog poo, mushed it up real good, and painted an iris on it, that's my left eye, basically, and shove it in my eye socket. I want a new one.
That's weird, Tom.
That's a cyber. Yeah. You really want cybernetics more than plastic surgery. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't care about how I look. I just care about how I see.
That's very practical of you. I commend that. I'm serious. I'm not kidding.
Well, I look forward to winking my right eye and seeing you and your exoskeleton far more clear than I would today.
I'd like it to kind of fold up, you know, so I keep it under my suit coat. And then just
I want to look like Tom Merritt, the trusted voice of a generation.
No, you don't. Nobody wants to do that. That's silly.
We all do.
Let's be serious.
I'm going as Tom Merritt at Dragon Con.
Yeah, so am I.
Tom looks like the youngest, oldest Boy Scout.
Slightly insulting, yet mostly complimentary.
You're very Norman Rockwell. It's a good thing. It's this very trusted sort of thing.
Yes, I'm the whitest man on the internet. I get it. All right.
Justin and I look like some sort of con man.
He's helping a young child in a Boy Scout uniform fold a flag in a painting that your grandma has.
While an apple pie cools on the window behind me.
Yes. I mean, if Justin was your scoutmaster, you'd be thinking, all right, there's going to be some arsons going on tonight.
I don't trust this man. Shall we move to four questions, Scott Johnson?
Indeed. Four questions where we ask rapid fire style our guests four questions each. They are not allowed to think too hard about it. They've been through this drill. They know what to do. They have to just say what's on their mind. I am asking my questions of Andrew. Andrew, are you ready?
Yes.
Fantastic. That is the fifth question, and you got it correct. Here's the first question. Would you like to find out that you're a Highlander? If so, why? Or if not, why not?
Yes, I would, because I want to live forever. I mean, who wants to live forever? I do.
You do?
But in the end, there can be only one, so you're going to live forever alone.
Dude, if I got to lop off some other people's heads, it's fine.
Side note, just watch that for film sake.
That's optimum for Andrew. That's like, wait, hold on. I don't know, every once in a while, like, I just refresh all my friends. Boop, let's go. Yeah.
I'm in.
That electric charge, that, oh my God, that movie, that affected the rest of my life.
Yeah, I just watched it literally last night because we were reviewing it this weekend. Some things hold up, some things don't. I'll tell you what does. Clancy Brown, that guy holds up. He's really good in it. Anyway, moving on. Question number two. What modern invention would you most like to go back in time and take credit for?
Microprocessor. The idea of silicon for microprocessors. The semiconductor.
That's great. That would have made you a great deal of money. Okay, great. And when you do that, come back and share it with us. Who wins in a future cybernetically enhanced street fight? David Blaine or Chris Angel?
David Blaine. David's my buddy.
Really? No Chris Angel, huh?
Well, I mean, David's a really neat guy. David's a really neat guy. So I'm backing David.
So really neat guys always win in a street fight?
David works out a little more than David does.
Okay,
David can take pain. I mean, David is a guy he's not going to stay down.
Gotcha. That makes more sense.
If Tom and I were in a fight on the street, I've decided that it wouldn't be to the death. It would be who has the most stuff in their pocket that we could construct a D&D game out of, and we just play it.
If we were in a fight on the street, everyone would just turn away embarrassed. Like,
I know. It wouldn't work out. All right,
it's
last
a fight
question.
To the first complaint.
To the wine.
To the wine, everyone. All right, last question for you, Andrew. Which theme planet would you prefer to live on? Pirate, zombie, pro wrestler, or upright walking cow folk?
Dude, pirates. Winches.
Upright walking cow folk, though.
Yeah, walking
cow folk planet.
You're like, I got this clue. Where do I go? Done. Okay, pirates.
Yeah,
sorry.
All right,
fair enough. Not pro wrestler, huh? All right. Fair enough. Hey, you've passed with flying colors. While. You've done your four questions with style. Congratulations, Tom. I hand you the baton.
Justin, are you sitting comfortably?
No, sure. Yes.
Good. Then we'll begin. Question number one. Justin, with so many things threatening our species, like environmental collapse, food shortages, weapons of mass destruction, what do you think will finally bring humanity down in the end?
Boredom. We'll all just robots. Be like, I mean, we've pretty much done it, right? Let's just
I was hoping you'd say those things you think we shouldn't be afraid of. Dang it.
Nothing. We're never going to die. Here's spoiler alert. We never die.
Whoa, spoiler.
Spoiler alert, orange. We're never going to die. We're all going to live forever. And I don't mean us as a human species. I mean all of us here.
Just the four of us. Okay.
Yeah.
And Jammer B.
All right. I gotcha. And Jammer B. Yeah. And our audience member. You will never die, sir.
Congratulations.
Question number two. With the mixing of ethnicities, what will most likely be the future basis of tribal identification? I'm positing for the purpose of this question that nations, ethnicities, races, that all goes out the window. Will we gather around for tribal identification our city and or region, our sports team, or our favorite flavor?
Multiple choice.
I mean, you got to go with city or region because sports team kind of derives from that.
Can, except in the case of things like the Minnesota Timberwolves. But, yeah, I guess that's still a region. You're right.
Yeah,
traveling
I mean, no matter
teams,
what, like,
never yeah, successful.
Even if your team moves, you know, you still had the tie to them when they were regional. Like, that's kind of how we tend to choose things, although that is softening a little bit now that we have access to them, you know, from all over the place. But I would say we're always going to draw lines with, you know, between cities and regions and everything. And we're always going to think that our place is better than the place that is across the street.
Area codes?
We know both.
Could we become partisan?
We kind of need both. We kind of need to know. We need to think that ours is the best. But then when we're growing up and we're rebelling, we need to think that the one next to us or far away is the best. I think it has two purposes, and I agree with you, Justin.
And identity is only as far as a hashtag now. I mean, hashtag new identity. It's easy.
I think area codes. Question number three. Yeah. Question number three. If the singularity happens, and it's a big F, right? But if the singularity happens and we all end up living forever, what will you be doing in 3126?
Annoying people with the same jokes I'm doing now. I'll be writing new Max Trollbot sketches.
It's the Max Trollbot Show.
Yeah. Oh, Rafe Needleman, what a hilarious question.
And question number four, what will be the exact year, pay attention here, what will be the exact year, party, and vote percentage, year, party, and vote percentage of our first robot president?
We're talking fully robot or a robot?
Yeah. Not Cyberman.
Yeah, not Cyberman president. I'm talking full robot, yeah.
The Cyberman ticket.
And not sexbot presidential scandal either.
Right, right. Not our cybernetic president was caught in bed with a full robot sex scandal. Yeah.
What are you doing to that auto pin, Mr. President?
Nothing.
I will say our first robot president will be elected in 32.
In 32?
Yeah, 3002.
Oh, okay. 3002. Got it.
3002, and it's going to have a human name. It'll be like President Johnson, but like his first name will just all be random serial numbers.
But what party?
It'll
will
be
it?
President 24892 Johnson.
Of the what party?
Wig.
Of the Tory, of the Bull Moose party.
Yeah, the Bull Moose are back, baby.
But the Bull, there'll be two ones. It'll be BU and one.
It's actually an acronym for something.
Yeah. He will get 90% of the vote on the slogan. My logic is infallible, Bull Moose.
I hope you're right.
Oh, I hope he's not.
Yeah. And that finishes your four questions. Justin Robert Young, thank you so much. And thank you both. That's the end of the show. I'm sad.
Didn't see you coming.
I'm sad as well. I you have no idea how excited I was because I was told a few months ago that by Tony Wang, who books the show, that once you're on the show, you're banned for life.
That used to be the rule.
Yep. And then all of a sudden we got a call and I'm like, did they forget? Like, has Tony been accepting my bribes finally? I was excited to be back on. It's always a fun time to hang out, especially with the three of you guys who I talk to so often in other things. This was great.
Yeah. This was really fun. Andrew Main, thank you as well for joining us. Let folks know in a minute about your stuff. Justin, since he froze up. Well, let's go to you and have you tell people where they can find your stuff online and weird things and all that.
NSFW show is the show on Twit that me and Brian Brushwood do. We do a lot of silly stuff, and you should watch tomorrow at 10 o'clock. It's always Tuesdays at 10 o'clock because I'm going to be live in Austin, and I think we're trying to get a pretty cool guest that's going to be live in Austin, so it'll be an all-live studio. Also, why am I going to Austin? It's because we're recording the sequel to our comedy album, our top 10 Billboard-charting comedy album, Night Attack, which you can currently buy for only 99 cents on Amazon. But me and Brian are going to go record the sequel to that, which will include a lot of hilarious stuff. And also, Game On, Brian Brushwood, Veronica Belmont. It's a video game show. If you like video games and a lot of horse bull puckery, then... Bull moose puckery. Then check that out. So that is twit.tv/GO. And we interviewed Scott Johnson's BFF, Kurt Schilling, on the last episode, and he was amazing and awesome.
He is one open talking dude. He will tell you things without, you know, he doesn't care if the PR guy's there or not.
What would Max say
stuff. He was great.
What would Max Trollbot call Kurt Schilling?
Max
Future
Trollbot,
Hall of Famer.
Yes, exactly. He would say, I am very pleased to be in your acquaintance, Scott Burley.
I thought you were going to say Randy Johnson.
I couldn't think of another pitcher with his stature. He has a fairly unique stature.
Andrew Main, thank you for being with us on Forecast. People don't realize this, but Andrew's Skype dropped off 75 times during the course of the show, and we only caught him dropping off twice.
And it's not because the robot overlords are standing in front of me making me say the things that I am about us not having to fear.
Not at all. let folks know where they can find your stuff online and all the good stuff that you're up to.
Please go to andrewmain.com/books if you're interested. I write science fiction and thriller books, kind of like these guys. I love to explore these sort of topics. I've got a series called The Chronological Man, which is sort of a retro series about, you know, technology taking place 100 years ago. And then I've got Public Enemy Zero, which is kind of my take on sort of why we're fascinated by zombies. It's a thriller about a guy who's everybody's trying to kill. And then I have The Grendel's Shadow, which is my far, far post-singularity adventure story. So check all those have been bestsellers on Amazon. And if you get a chance, andrewmain.com/books. And we have these great audiobook versions narrated by Mr. Justin Robert Young. He does a fantastic narration of them. They're cheap. They're 99 cents. And so if you like sci-fi, like fun storytelling, you know, comic book style adventure, check that out. andrewmain.com/books.
Absolutely. Go check it out, folks. Scott Johnson, thank you as always. Messages for the people?
Well, I would only point their attention to the Kurt Schilling baseball I have signed. When I die, I'll have some money for my kids. I would just like to say awesome guest today, by the way, and loved having both of them on TMS recently. Of course, Justin's on there every Thursday, and we had Andrew on Monday ago talking about his books and stuff. So I would point people's direction to the fabulous Frog Pants Morning Show called The Morning Stream. It airs Monday through Thursday most weeks, and it involves me and my co-host, Mr. Brian Ibbett of Coverville fame, and they can find more at frogpants.com/TMS.
Now, folks, you're probably like, okay, that's a lot of plugging. Great stuff. I got a bunch of things on my list. I got to read Chronological Man. I got to check out the Weird Things podcast. I'm gonna start listening to The Morning Stream. I don't need another thing to add to my list, and that's why you should be glad that FSL Tonight is over this week. The last episode with Justin Robert Young, where we announce who the new teams added to the league next week will be at FSLTonight.com. So don't bother adding it to your list because the season is over for now.
Absolutely. Yeah. Although, if you do want to completely abandon everything else we've talked about and go vote immediately at FSLTonight.com, you could still affect who will be advanced for next season's FSL. FSL.
And so, don't think you know who's going to win the vote. All right, you've got to listen to the episode because
I'll tell you. I mean, then I don't want to get into what we're going to talk about on Wednesday, but I've heard that things have really the charges have really started to step up against
irregularities have been identified. Charges are flying. It's all kinds of things. So check it out, FSLtonight.com. Thanks, everybody, for watching or listening. Forecast right here on the Twit Network. You can find us at twit.tv/FC and also at our own blog, forecastpodcast.com. Email us, forecastpodcast@gmail.com. We'll see you next time.
Tell me it's 32 years away.
Geez, Andrew just can't wait to get the hell out of here, huh?
Yes, see, bye, Andrew.
His internet sucks.
Wow, I mean, how many times was it, Jammer B? It was literally it was a dozen, probably.
I'm amazed. We really got danced around that well. Like, clearly Tom's prowess on display here, folks.
Well, good communication from Jammer B as well.
Kind of
alert me.
That's awesome, but sucks that he kept getting cut. Oh, dropped the Curt Schilling ball.
Now it's worthless.
Ah, shoot.
Actually worth more because it says Scott, say hi to Henry for me, Curt Schilling.
You know what, Justin? I was kind of darkly alluding to this, but Betelgeuse Hitchhikers, I have discovered, have been ballot box stuffing.
What?
Single IP address for like 2,000 votes.
Wow. So, I mean, I'll tell you what, we don't know what's going to happen because I'll tell you what, not only... if these are proven true, if these charges are proved true, then that's going to affect who's going to get in, and that bumps up the next person in line. But also, we don't know how many spots are going to be open.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, with all that stuff brewing around Canton. A lot of questions will be answered by Mr. Stan Lee.
Yes, Commissioner Stan Lee, and hopefully we're going to have, I need to coordinate with him, professional hockey blogger who also doubles as the FSL rumor mill reporter.
Excellent, that'd be great.
Eklund's gonna talk about all the off-season rumors.
Have you guys ever done a show where it's just four monitors laid out like that and nobody's sitting in the middle?
Yes, This Week in Law.
that sounds like future court, you know, where the council decides your fate.
Yeah.
Ever notice in the future it's always councils?
Real genius, too. Yeah.
You can cut away from that. I don't have anything else to say. Cut away.
No. We want to see your connection go down for once.
Night guy.
It's like Heisenberg's uncertainty principle with you. Like,
I think somebody in the next townhouse is like probably trying to get all the Sherlock episodes or something. I have no idea what's going on here.
Where he is in a lineup.
You can't see him.
Well, it was like last night it was deduced that Chad is the love child of Ronald McDonald and Wendy from Wendy's Hamburgers.
Yes.
Too soon.
Born under the flag of the Burger King.
Too soon, Andrew. Too soon.
Oh, sorry.